This is a special time of the year when we look at it, right? It's in a way, we feel like it's a lot going on in lives in the country and society. And Christmas is one time that generally things seems to be slowing down. People acknowledge that. Probably not tonight on highways. Right. And I love the way how Yale as a structure runs IMC, and he uses the phrases like all are welcome, and he also emphasizes you don't need to leave your faith to practice Buddhism. Buddhism can coexist with your faith. In that regard, I think it is perfectly okay to wish people Merry Christmas. So the sense of celebration or celebratory time all around us, right? And also, it's a great time for us to connect with our families and share our practice of loving kindness and other things, right? My daughter flew in a couple of days ago from DC. Tonight, my boyfriend flies out from DC. And after the talk, I have to go to San Francisco to pick him up. Yeah. And in the jail where I work, it's been busy and rewarding and emotional all at the same time. And I've been facilitating with working with many church communities to offer communion in the pods. We started this exercise on Monday this week and went through this afternoon. And it's an emotional time for many inmates, and they feel they're not with the loved ones. They didn't buy a gift for their loved ones, they didn't give toys to their kids. And they form sadness in their own minds, reflecting and discussing and sharing these things with us. In a broad context, many people often refer, like at the highest level or at many levels, all religions pretty much teach the same thing, and there is a lot of truth to that. And when Christ teaches love your enemies, more specifically, there is some thing that is, it's not just a statement, it is cultivation of an inner mind and inner heart. It's not a sentimental offering, but pointing to a way to cultivate an inner strength. And to be able to do that, there has to be a sense of self-acceptance and be able to use patience as a strength. And that's a topic for tonight. So we've been exploring topics such as patience in the context of 10 paramis over the last few months. So far, we covered generosity, virtue, wisdom, and renunciation. Today is the fifth one, the patience. Subsequent months, we'll cover the next five: energy, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, equanimity. It's the 10th. As I mentioned before, can't see hear from any other teacher or from my own understanding and looking at some of the scriptures, Buddha never taught these 10 things all in the same sermon or same talk or same way, but they all are mentioned throughout the canon in so many different contexts as a way of the word is cultivating your heart to be in spiritual path. And I often use the word cultivate, even my own inner reflection, that word is pretty much there. And I always think about what exactly constitutes cultivation. Obviously, I need to invoke the right seed that I believe I have, or we all have, and then foster the right conditions, including the conditions of the soil. The other dependent factors, water, sunshine, everything that seek to sprout. And I particularly love the way Gill teaches the Paramis, and he brings in the concept through way to understand Paramis is to understand how they support ethical living, how to cultivate a deepened sense of compassion. And of course, the common thread you see for many teachers is it steadies the heart on journey towards awakening. So, in a more specific sense, all the Paramis have few things in common. One of them is this is not just knowing or understanding, right? It is how awakening is lived and matured, and its foundational aspect of our practice. Which means we gradually grow, deepening, cultivating these 10 perfections in a way that sets us closer and closer to the path of awakening. It's how I interpret that. So, patience in particular, we use the word a lot in our societies, right? And we're going to delve into different types of usages of this word. The most important thing is it's not passive, but really this word strength is what comes to my mind. Patience is a real strength. And we're going to work on determination, and we can contrast or at least to understand the coexistence of patience and determination as we get to the topic. And more importantly, I think patience is a wonderful resource or an attribute that has a quality that carries us across the suffering. And we all have dealt with the Buddhist definition of suffering in so many ways. Is it a nuisance? Is it anger? Is it something we don't like? Is it something unexpected? This is not what I want. We can come up the word suffering in so many ways, as the root word dukkha literally means it's off kilter. The wagon wheel is wobbling. And right now, in the environment we are in, needless to say, it's essential. We're living in an age of urgency. Sometimes you can use the word outrage, and we want everything to happen now, immediacy. Don't know if you can read this on Zoom. I'll try to show you. And this is my fridge magnet, a quote from Gandhi that reads, "There is more to life than increasing its speed." And that's the world we live in. It's not just speed. We are inundated with information, inundated with concerns, inundated with so many changes that are staring at us, are coming our way. And in all of this regard, right, whether it's news or climate stress or social conflict or even personal grief, right? I want to simplify it to say patience is a capacity to stay present without losing sensitivity to what we are caring about. It's a capacity to stay present. We're not trying to harden ourselves to ignore these things, but certainly we are staying with it without losing the sensitivity for us. So in Pali, the word for patience is kanti. In Mahayana tradition, they derive word from Sanskrit called kshanti, KS. Sometimes in Sanskrit, just the word shanti, Shanti, is used. Pretty much says the same thing. While in different definitions, it's referred to as an endurance or even a sense of tolerance or deeper acceptance, right? And each one of these words in our own minds invoke a unique type of feeling or sensation. What do I mean by that? When we say I'm tolerating something because I'm patient, the word tolerance implicitly has a resistance in it. I'm not fully okay with it, but I will put up with it. Right? That's one aspect of it. And then there is a deeper sense of acceptance. Okay, I'll accept this. Is the resistance fully gone? I doubt it. Ultimately, the ultimate word from a language perspective for me is allowing. So when I'm allowing, pretty much the resistance loses its energy. And when I get to the point of allowing, it becomes the beginning of staying with as it is, as against my urge for it to end. Or my desire, want it to be something different than what it is. Then it becomes part of the phenomena as it unfolds around us, within us. By no means this is a suppression or a resignation. We have to distinguish that in the context of patience also. And another simple line I was taking notes and studying this that came to my mind is the ability to bear reality without adding suffering. As we often hear about the second arrow fable or metaphor, and the second arrow is where the added suffering is. And the patience is removing the completely the effect of the second arrow. In a traditional sense, right, we use the word patience with pain and difficulty, right? Our own self, how what we endure. But also patience is often referred to in the context of others on criticism, differences, lack of agreement, lack of seeing it a common way. And there is an aspect of dealing with patience with respect to what is real and true. Are we missing the point of impermanence or uncertainty? Right. And each one of them has a way for patience to unfold. And in our normal lives, we use patience in a much more broader term. A story just came up a few weeks ago in India. Some of you may have seen the pictures in major cities in India where traffic issues are monumentally bad, which you're not dealing with tens or hundreds of cars, you're dealing with thousands of cars all jammed at an intersection. No one has nowhere to go, but people keep honking. That's going to help the cause. Okay. So the government in Bombay sought the help of the IIT, one of the premier engineering institutions in India. Think of it like Ivy Leagues of India, right? To solve the problem of noise pollution and how do you bring this honking down. So these brilliant engineers came up with an idea. The traffic lights in India has a timer on the top, everyone sees. It starts at 180 or 120, 3 minutes or 2 minutes. And most people shut off the engine, and until the number comes down, they don't turn on the engine as they're ready to leave. So they added some sensors to that. What sensors did they add? The sensors pick up the honking sound. If people honk and it reaches a certain threshold of honking, what these people did is it resets the number back to 180 seconds. It's like punishing everyone because of the way the numbers go, right? And this is an experimental phase they launched about a week to 10 days ago. Yeah. And this is where the patient story gets interesting. People have nowhere to go. They lose the patience and honk as if it opens up the ways. Now, patience is manifesting another way. The people who honk, in spite of this change and knowing this new reset of the timer thing, they're still honking. see how the timer works. But the people in other car, people are not happy with this honking, and they're leaving their car and going to the car who's honking. And they let their patients do the talking, or lack of patience do the talking. Right? So in that context, we often use the word patience, be patient, right? And in all of this context, there's implicitly there is a time aspect to this theory. However, if you pay for close attention, patience is not a weakness by any means. It's not even just enduring, particularly if something, an injustice goes going on, patience is not the first word that comes to my mind. It's by no means tolerating injustice. And by no means it's suppressing anger either. So in the conventional terms, right, in everyday usage, we often use in the context of waiting calmly until something changes. Hey, be patient and things will get better. Be patient, this rain will stop. I will bear the resistance during this period of time, is what we are telling ourselves. Or we are tolerating the discomfort up to a point while experiencing some kind of irritation or annoyance. We are even suppressing irritation in the name of patience. So, in the conditionality here is, I will be patient until da, da, da. Right? So all of in these definitions, the orientation is an external focus, something outside to change. So we need to hold ourselves until that point. So in a way, the definition of patience here becomes willpower based. However, we phrase this in all of these examples in the conventional sense, there is resistance, there is resentment. And there is a kind of delayed reactivity. We may not impulsively react at the same moment, but we are suppressing it. To put this definition is different in the sense if you look at the way Buddha expressed the word kanti as a perfection, he emphasized patience as a liberating mental quality, not just about endurance. And the foremost criteria in the teaching that comes out is we can demonstrate that we are patient if there is no aversion developing within us. One of the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion, and called hatred and aversion in the similar context. So in the Buddhist context, we say patience works when we don't have aversion or hatred in our minds and hearts, or even to a mental condition. In fact, in Dhammapada, 184th Sutta, patience is the highest ascetic practice. That's the old translation. So it's not about putting up with in this regard, right? It's a capacity to remain open to pain, delay, or difficulty without hatred or dislike or irritation or any one of those things to develop. So, unlike the external factors in the colloquial or a common definition of patience, the second area that Buddhism brings in is the bringing wisdom to meet patience. Understanding and seeing these experiences raised due to causes and conditions. And this too shall pass, impermanent aspect of it. So part of this requires a reorientation. It is not about the event or incident or what causes us to invoke patience. It is about noticing within ourselves who is the self experiencing the patient. It's not what is affecting us as against why are we affected. So we essentially reframe about ourselves. So what can I do in terms of clear seeing or choiceless awareness that would allow me to bring the wisdom into this equation and be able to apply the criteria of patience in the sentence. So if we follow this train, absolutely, patience falls under the criteria of courage and strength. It's a form of inner strength. The courage to calmly present and face or meet or process the difficulty so that we can wisely respond without having to be impulsive or reactive. And if I summarize basically the conventional patients and the Buddhist patients, and this is kind of a, it took me my thought to the last Kalyanamitta we did a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, I can't remember, where we talked about is Buddhism common sense or is something unique, right? And it's my view is it's yes to both. In some ways it's common sense, some ways it's a different way of looking at things, right? So in conventional sense, we look upon patients as waiting for change or have some kind of an outcome-focused mindset. We are enduring, oftentimes with resistance. And occasionally we are suppressing reaction. And we are invoking willpower to be able to be patient. Whereas in Buddhist definition, the similar things change with staying present, which means I'm focused on process of being patient than the object I need to be patient about or on. So the endurance here is an openness of unaffected mind than a requirement for something to change. And the wisdom part is understanding ourselves well enough so that we can respond wisely. And that in itself becomes a liberative entity. So I want to use the word we understand, we process, yet we are unaffected. That characterizes being patient. So in one sentence, I like writing the summaries, and this is my way of understanding what I fully understand, right? It helps with my language skills as well. In conventional patients, in conventional aspect, patients waits for difficulty to end. And Buddhist patient transforms the heart that meets the difficulty. So in conventional sense, a patient's wait for difficulty to end, and Buddhist patience transforms the heart that meets the difficulty. So in grief processing, where I do quite a bit of that work, is we not pushing away the grief, we are tending to it with utmost tenderness. We make room for it. We give allow it. There's no time limit for that. Right? There's a sense you can apply the word patience and allowing for that experience to exist, not wanting or trying to push that away. So how do we practice this patience? Patience comes to my mind when I really explore the relationship with anger more often. Anger particularly is having a predetermined sense of what it needs to be and what it is not. It can be a reaction, it can be, I expected this. There's a deep inside that is expectation. I don't know if I mentioned the story before. This particular episode just stuck with me for a long time. So over 20 years ago, I want to say it was early 2000s. My younger daughter was 4 years old at the time. And I took her and another young kid to a park nearby. And I just came back from work and I was in my business work clothes and my polished shoes and everything. I was sitting on a bench and watching these kids play. And I had a BlackBerry back then. That's my email device. Scrolling through that. And these kids are playing on it. And suddenly my daughter found it amusing to bring some dirt and put it on my shoes. Okay. I polished my shoes and I had my own idiosyncrasies and how we way things need to be. But somehow it didn't bother me. They allowed her to. I found it amusing that they have found it amusing to do that. And her friend joined it. This is in a park bench. And right next to me, as we swing on, a couple of other guys sat there and they were having some animated conversation. In that conversation, the other guy's elbow briefly touched me. And that's all. It somehow triggered significant reaction in me. Right? So whatever my daughter and her friend were doing wasn't having any impact on a piece. I was enjoying the stuff. And just someone's elbow touching me and suddenly invoked a significant sense of anger. I think about it all the time. It's not about the incident, but the values that I place and how I became a tinderbox for certain things and allowing and accepting for the others. And I feel that's understanding of that is where the practice of Buddhism can lead to. And in both these cases, the self that forms with relationship to in one scenario is not the same self it forms in another scenario. An understanding of not self doctrine or a characteristic that Buddha taught is such an important learning practice to understand who is the one that is impatient here, as against why am I impatient. And the one central aspect of this cultivation is allowing to invoke wisdom a nanosecond before we are impatient or reactive or impulsive. And the two situations that wisdom will invoke for us, one is to see impermanence, and the other one to see the conditions rather than to blame. And you see the conditions that's causing it, right? Of course, the simple but not always easy answers are pausing before responding, breathing through discomfort, having some inner self-worth. This too can be born. May I kindly observe the phenomenon? Or more a reflection question I wrote down is, what is patience asking me to do right now? So it's kind of shifting the energy from negative energy towards outside of ourselves to kinder energy to inside of ourselves. The other area I've been dwelling on, I started this notion of the Theravada tradition of being more canon-oriented, understanding the suttas, understanding the different commentaries on it, and then the Mahayana aspect of it, which is probably 400 or 500 years after Buddha, where the documents started to come through. But then obviously, we had a profound influence on me over the last 24 months. Is the Bodhisattva, Bodhicitta Varya by Shantideva that came in 6th century or 7th century. There is a whole section on patience as an attribute there. In many, many, even Stephen Batchelor's translation has 35-40 pages long. And on Saturday, CC and I were chatting about Lamrim and really go through the practice. This, the paramitas, they call 6 of them, patience is one of them, is implicit in the practice. Right? And they use Mahayana tradition, and a lot of them, they gravitate towards two things, which is not Theravada way of seeing things. One is, look at from the point of others and service. How is your Bodhisattva ideals supported patience towards all beings? It's not just inner cultivation of patience alone. It is about being patient and caring and seeking liberations for all beings. And the second one, which is a little bit more challenging topic, it's quite challenging topic to grasping, is to see emptiness in all causes and conditions. Don't just name the causes and conditions. See the emptiness in that. Right? And the other one, when Gill teaches in the Theravada, I think I mentioned to you about the ethics course, he brings in the notion of patience with an ethical and psychological emphasis, is cultivated as a way to be without suffering by having a different understanding using the wisdom. And in the ethical context, Gill uses the phrase, it's a safeguard against unwholesome actions. And the last comment he made there is patience is a foundation for sila and samadhi, two of the groupings in the Eightfold Path. And there's another line in Dhammapada where Gill translates, he who is patient like earth is called a true ascetic. And the Vayana text from Shantideva, Bodhisattva Vatra, it says, no evil is there similar to anger, no austerity comparable to patience. And the teachings there lead us to profound understanding, the profound sense of emptiness in all phenomena. What am I impatient about? There is no substance here. We are constructing the substance ourselves. It's empty of existence. So to summarize, in the Theravada, we generally, because it's doing the dominant practice, it's an ethical endurance. It's a way to manage anger. Right? The idea is personal liberation. I still mentioned it's a psychological discipline. In Mahayana, it's built into the Bodhisattva of perfection. It's transformation of anger to see emptiness in it. It's really emptiness focus. And it takes towards universal liberation, not just personal liberation. And the teachings of Mahayana direct us to develop an ontological insight to see the nature of the being itself. So my one sentence comparison or that contrasting is, in Theravada tradition, what appears to me, again, this is my understanding, patience trains the heart to endure without harm. Mahayana patience frees the heart by dissolving the one who is harmed. If there is emptiness, what is there to be angry about? Let me stop there. Happy to engage in some discussions, questions, other interpretations that I may have missed. Thank you.
Very timely, as always. I feel like anytime I come back and attend, you know, like there's something that comes up that I'm like, oh, something just happened today or recently that, you know, that so synchronous. As we're given all these kind of, sounds like kind of different ways to look at patience. All of that, what was coming to mind a lot was like these past several years have to me been a big exercise and test of my patience.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Like one of them is like a drug side effect injury thing that like it's gonna take time to like resolve. And then about 2 years ago I got injured at work. So I'm in the workers' comp system, which I think is like a huge test of patience. It kind of seems like the insurance side wants you to give up. They delay things to try to meet in
that process. Yeah, patience and processes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in that way, there's been, when you brought up like the anger and resentment, like, yeah, that keeps coming up. And then, but eventually at this point, it's comes to resignation. Even with my own lawyer of like, they don't answer my emails. Why do I even bother trying? You know, like why even, like they answer one email out of three or something. And I'm like, and then it brings me back to, am I being a burden or something? You know, it, but there's this, it's been a lot of tests of patience, but I did, when you were defining it, I noticed that a lot of my definition was of more like a societal thing of like speed and outcome, you know, like I'll be patient until I see my medical examiner. then, or like I'll be patient until this next thing gets approved, and then, but again, it arises again and again. It's this samsara.
I'm sorry, we are relate. We are completely can relate to it. My wife has delegated all insurance dealings to me. So I completely empathize with what you're going through, right? And my simple remembrance for me is I bring in self-care into this. I don't want to get upset or affected in this transaction. I want to put that thought as a reminder to myself. Ram, don't hurt yourself. Don't make it worse for yourself, right? And that serves as enough of a shock absorber or a cushion to endure the process.
Yeah, and it is very much like this endurance or tolerance in
And we
this
don't want
way.
to think negatively, or I don't want to hate the process. I don't want to hate the person on the phone. They're all doing this. They have a job. They have families. They're doing their best. They get through a lot of things. Our mind can go off constructing all these things very quickly, but all of them lead to my own inner peace being affected if I'm not careful. That's a key part of self-care.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where I'm just like trying to find compassion for my attorney. Like, I know
Start
she's
with
probably got a
ourselves.
ton of cases,
Start with
right?
ourselves.
But then, but that's still, but there's, I still notice this irritation. And it, yeah, I think.
The combination there, right? This is partly conditionality, is how do you bring assertiveness and patience to coexist? And that we are not trading off assertiveness to be patient. That is not the teaching says. In fact, there is a sutta called Uposatha Sutta, Uposatha. It comes under Udana 5.1 in Sutta Nipata. And not many teachers have talked about it. And in that sutta, this is in a monastic circles, and Buddha was supposed to give the Patimokkha, the last prayer before monks go to bed. And they're all waiting outside, waiting in that meditation center, and Buddha doesn't show up. Waited, waited, and that Ananda and the Mahamoggallana, his main disciples, were also there. And Ananda approaches Buddha and asks him, they're all waiting for Patimokkha, what time are you going to go? Are you ready to go? And Buddha says, no, there is someone in that room who is not pure from Dharma standpoint. I won't teach, I won't offer Patimokkha to such a person. My first reaction is Buddha said that? Right? At least when that was a good. And then he sends Ananda and the Mahamoggallana over, and they have in the both in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation as well as in the Sutta Central translation, they use the phrase that Ananda and Mahamoggallana, using their superpowers of awakened mind, they were able to pinpoint who was that person. And they went and asked him that as three times it's for you to leave the Sangha so that others can experience Patimokkha. Okay. So this whole thing kind of challenged me, or at least this part of Buddhist teaching I never knew. Then after three times saying that person doesn't get up or leap, and the sutta explicitly said that Mahamoggallana picked up his arm, took him out of the room, dropped him out, and locked the door. And Buddha comes in and offers the Patimokkha and goes on with the Sangha. So I'm scratching my head about patience and this whole sutta, right? What is going on here? Which is another way of saying you have to be assertive if certain things are of higher importance. Right? And that is very contrasting for me from a broader Buddhist teachings. What we see is we endure patience at all costs. And that's not what the sutta seems to be telling me. Right? So if I don't like what my insurance agent is telling, My answer is I write long letters and I need to be assertive and state my position. This is my understanding. Show me where it says differently and follow the processes. Right? I don't need to nod my head. Okay, I accept what you say. Somehow I don't feel comfortable doing that. And in today's climate where we are in, we have many, many, many opportunities to be assertive. I participated in my share of No King's protest and all the stuff. It's not just solidarity. It's not about me finding some commonality alone. I think those are important factors, but it's my way of showing I am being patient and yet I want change to happen.
Thank you. And just thank you too for kind of explaining the Theravada and Mahayana, the difference. I've been trying to figure it out without, haven't had the time to try to Google it, but explain it that way because I think I'm still pretty new. I consider myself pretty new to Buddhism. And so to originally just learn that there's kind of these two big overarching things that I still, until tonight,
I mean, this is a big
there's more
thing. I talked to
clarity.
Gil a lot about this, the notion of bodhisattva ideals, which is allowing for all beings to be awakened. And it's one of the vows we take in the Mahayana tradition. And that is implicit. Whereas emphasis, what is called the arahat, is for personal awakening. If you go to IMC website, there is an article, it's a long article Gil wrote, is called Arahat and Bodhisattva Walking Hand in Hand. So it brings the Theravada and Mahayana tradition both. Okay? And if you don't find it, just send me an email. I'll send you guys the link.
Thank you.